ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of ABC News Daily. It's a podcast explaining one big news story affecting your world in just 15 minutes. From ABC investigations to politics, the cost of living, to major global events. Expert guests and journalists join me to explain why the world works the way it does. Follow the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.
There's a real sort of anxiety here, I think, in various quarters about where the country is headed. Has America fallen into the trap where party, if you like, comes before national interest?
Is what we're seeing part of the pattern, or are we witnessing a significant change right now?
It's both. Any gap or any vacuum that's left in the region, China will gladly fill and be the default hegemon in the region, if you want to put it like that. And that would be an outcome that would not be in our long-term interest. The thing people always underestimate about the US is just when you think they've gone to the brink, they pull back.
The 4th of July is known around the world as a celebration of all things American. Independence Day, the birthday of the United States as an independent and free country. But as this country marks 250 years since the Declaration of Independence, it's an understatement to observe that unity in the United States is under strain. This country, which has been a military, corporate, and cultural superpower for most of our lives, is at an extraordinary and difficult moment. Even the celebrations to mark this milestone have become a flashpoint of division. Put simply, Donald Trump has taken over. He put an organization called Freedom 250 in charge of handling these events, from a great American state fair to plans for a triumphal arch to be built in Washington. Democrats say celebrations that were supposed to be nonpartisan or bipartisan have instead become all about feeding the president's insatiable ego. This does not look like a country with a particularly strong sense of shared national identity or a shared view of what role it should be playing in the world. As a result, US allies right now are hedging, while adversaries are taking advantage of the uncertainty. But for all its current problems, is it premature to write the US off? This is an extraordinary country that's shown a capacity over many years to adapt, to change, to lead. So on this 4th of July, I'm keen to look at what's become of the United States and where that leaves Australia. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Arthur Sinodinos is a former Australian ambassador to the United States, a former minister in the Abbott and Turnbull governments. He's still based in Washington, where he holds various board and advisory roles. Arthur Sinodinos, good to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, David. Great to be with you.
So just give us a sense of what's happening there in Washington to mark this 250th birthday and whether, I guess, locals are in a mood of celebration or cynicism right now.
Well, celebrations are building up. You alluded to the mall before in the great American State Fair. that's in full swing now. Some debate over the number of people going there and all the rest of it. But all around D.C. itself, you can see it's starting to be festooned with flags and other decorations. So people are very much aware that July 4 is coming. Tomorrow, Friday, here in Washington, is a public holiday in the run-up to Saturday. But it's also, as you alluded to in your introduction, David, a time of introspection here in the US as people reflect on where this country has come in 250 years and where it's headed and what it will be like, not just in the next 250 years, but sort of in 250 years, but tomorrow. There's a real sort of anxiety here, I think, in various quarters about where the country is headed for a number of reasons. But again, much of this is interpreted depending on your political
depending on where
point
you
of
sit.
View.
No, exactly. And look, I will come to where it's at and where it's headed, but the way this moment, this anniversary is being marked really has become so symbolic, I suppose, of the divisions that are there. So you've got that great, what's it called, the American State Fair on the National Mall. And I think, what is it, 10 states that are refusing to send delegations to take part in this? What's all this about? Is it because it is seen as, Trump taking control of the actual celebrations?
Yeah, there are perceptions of politicisation of the celebrations, just as there have been issues around various other ways in which Donald Trump is trying to remake Washington, if not in his own image, and certainly in a sort of image that he's more comfortable with.
You mean like the reflecting pool, the arch, all of these sort of plans?
What they're doing to the White House with the new ballroom that they want to put into place, what's happened in the Oval Office with the increased gold decoration and everything else. So look, what this moment is highlighting is that political polarization, which is so deep here. But I think it's a mistake to see this as solely a Trump creation. He's both a cause and a consequence of the sort of deep polarization that we're seeing here in the US. And that's, of course, what's leading to this introspection about the future.
Yeah, and look, this is very real, that sort of division. And it's not just the rival. There's rival events, right? There's the one in Washington that Trump's going to headline. There's one in LA that's going to be taking place this weekend, hosted by Queen Latifah, I think it is. So you've got, obviously two very different Americas being portrayed in rival events on different sides of the continent. But look, you've got a whole series of polls right now that are pointing to these divisions. Fewer people say they feel proud to be American. More people fear democracy is in danger of collapsing. There are divisions over what powers the president should have. I guess, whether he should have absolute immunity. There's division over the integrity of the electoral process, over immigration, over what should be taught about American history in schools. I mean, how would you describe, Arthur Sinodinos, the split in American society right now?
Well, I think there's a deep split along political lines. There's no doubt about it, even to how you view the economy. If you're Republican-leaning, you tend to view the economy more positively than if you're a Democrat. But that was also the case during the Biden administration, right? Mm-hmm. The vice versa, if you like, at that time. So that's been ongoing. It's as bad as it's ever been.
Is it worse than it's ever been, do you think, or is this something we've seen before?
Look, if you go back through American political history, there have been lots of divisions. But I think we're in a stage where, the presidency, the power of the presidency is being exercised in a way which probably is even more open and flagrant than in some of the past administrations. And so I think that's really brought all these issues to the boil around, the checks and balances in the Constitution, and has America fallen into the trap where party, if you like, comes before national interest, which was something that George Washington warned about in his farewell address.
I mean, look, the great American experiment was a phrase coined by the founding fathers, the idea being that the founding of the US was going to be an experiment, a test to see if a country with a diverse population with differences like the ones we're talking about could succeed by sticking to democracy, liberty, rule of law, rather than having, a monarchy or dictatorship or any of the sort of European models. It has been wildly successful, I guess, as an experiment, hasn't it, for many years. But, we've seen a civil war, we've seen divisions over civil rights and, decisions like the Vietnam War and so on. So when you look at that sweep of history, Arthur Sinodinos, is what we're seeing part of the pattern, or are we witnessing a significant change right now?
It's both. It's both part of a pattern, because we've seen some pretty tough divisions here before. But the challenge today, I think, is that because the presidency and the power of the presidency is being exercised in the way that it is, the debates around the relationship between the various parts of government, the courts versus the Congress versus the presidency, have been brought into even sharper relief. And what we've seen is, I think the president has been prepared to push his power as far as he can and in effect, dared the Congress and the courts to pull him back. Now, there's more of that happening now, but the president operates on the basis that he has a mandate from the people, that he won a majority of not just the Electoral College, but also the electorate, the popular vote. So from his perspective, he believes he has a mandate to do what he needs to do, and that other people should act accordingly.
But that pushback you mentioned from the courts, from the Congress, I suppose that the media is an institution as well. You're saying we are starting to see a more forceful pushback, a check and balance to push back at what the president's trying to do here?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, the Supreme Court came up with a whole series of decisions recently. Some of them enhanced presidential power. Others rebuffed proposals that the president put forward, including on things like birthright citizenship. So the picture is more nuanced than maybe you get from just reading some of the press. But the point is that there is this active struggle going on.
And this is a court too with a conservative majority, we should point out as well, but it is showing a willingness to push back.
Yes, yeah, that's right. It's showing a willingness to push back. And I think you're seeing within the Congress, the Senate Republicans in particular, being more prepared to push back. The Congress passed a resolution around ending the war in Iran the other day, for example. That is happening more and more, I think, because the president's popularity has been dropping, and not just because of, sort of Democrats and independents, but some Republicans as well, and part of the coalition that helped him win the last election is starting to fray.
US allies, if we look at how the rest of the world is watching what's happening in the US, and particularly around this 250th anniversary, US allies, including Australia, are looking at those divisions, I think, with caution, some apprehension, some hedging as well. You know, we see Australia trying to build closer ties with other middle powers and so on, and the Europeans doing similar. I guess one big question for the world is whether these divisions and strains in the US are going to disappear once the Trump era is done, or whether this is a more structural and permanent moment that we're seeing, and division that we're seeing. What do you think? Is that easy to answer that question?
It's not easy to answer that question, but I think the beginning of an answer is to see that there are structural factors here which are impelling the US to reappraise its role in the world, to focus more on domestic preoccupations. And there's some of the reasons that Donald Trump was able to get the White House. It wasn't a brain snap by the American electorate that put Donald Trump in the White House. It was because in 2016 and again in 2024, Trump was seen as the change agent at the time when a majority of Americans thought the country is going in the wrong direction. And so I think what Americans are wanting is a government that is putting more focus on addressing some of the issues that we see domestically in terms of cost of living, in terms of the inequality in both wealth and income, addressing some of the infrastructure and other deficiencies that have to be fixed up, retooling industrial capacity. I'd be surprised if a future administration, Republican or Democrat, necessarily pushed back on some of the actual policies that have been implemented in recent times. Where I think there would be a difference is that Trump's quite a unique political character, and there's a lot of Sturm und Drang around him, noise and so on, and that sort of drama might subside. You have a different sort of president. In fact, the Americans may well look for their next president to be someone who lowers the temperature. But many of the structural factors impelling what's happening in the US will still be there post a Trump presidency.
Yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, perhaps less show, less fire hose of content on social media and everywhere that we see Trump in our daily lives. But a similar approach, whoever follows him, on things like global trade, I mean, and the use of American power in the world, we have seen under Trump, haven't we? A very different approach to what we've been used to for decades when it comes to maintaining, and championing free trade, in playing that role on the world stage as the global superpower and policeman, if you like. Is that the big change that this Trump era is going to leave us with?
It's this reappraisal of America's role in the world, and how it sort of acts as, in inverted commas, leader of the free world. and what role allies and partners should expect to play. And I think the expectation from the US going forward is that allies and partners are more self-reliant. They bring more to the alliances and partnerships with the US. I don't think the US will forsake alliances and partnerships going forward. And by the way, neither should we, for example, forsake the US alliance. I think that would be a great mistake for us. But there are things we can do to strengthen ourselves, both in terms of our self-reliance and, as you alluded to before, our alliances and partnerships with other countries, but at the same time, doubling down on the alliance by finding ways to engage the US and in the security of the region, and keep reminding them that not only do we need them, but that they need us. And I think that's going to be important going forward, whoever is in the White House. People talk about this issue of American reliability. I think the best way to ensure American reliability is to show not only that we're, you know, pulling our own weight, but that we're prepared to bring the necessary firepower to the table to work together on issues of common security interest in the region, and keep reminding the Americans of how their security interests are bound up with our security and the security of other like-minded partners in the region.
So it's going to take more work, essentially. I mean, you think it's the right approach for Australia to build or try to build closer defence ties with the US through AUKUS, but at the same time, deepen connections with others? And do you think the Europeans will take a similar approach? Or do you see this sort of alliance, US alliance structure breaking down over time?
Well, it could break down if we don't exercise agency, not just Australia, but other countries in the region like Japan, Korea, the Philippines, whatever. But the fact of the matter is that simply strengthening our relationships among ourselves in the region as middle powers is not enough. We've got to have a policy towards the US, all of us. Mm. And the best policy we can have towards the US is one of constructive engagement in a way that suits mutual interests. And I think that's important, because any gap or any vacuum that's left in the region, China will gladly fill and be the default hegemon in the region, if you want to put it like that. Mm. And that would be an outcome that would not be in our long-term interest.
So I guess that brings us to, finally, the question of what does America 300 look like rather than 250? You know, I don't know if we can forecast another 250 years into the future, but certainly another 50 years, you know, some decades from now. What does this country, the United States, look like? Is it still that global superpower? Are we looking at a multipolar world? Are we looking at it influence the globe in the way that it has for so long?
Look, undoubtedly America will still be a superpower, but in a multipolar world. I think you're right to posit it in that context. I think it will still be economically and in terms of innovation and technology a leader. There's no doubt that China is catching up or surpassing in some areas. But the way the US operates, the thing people always underestimate about the US is just when you think they've gone to the brink, they pull back, they turn the ship around. I mean, I saw this during COVID with the way they financed Operation Warp Speed to deal with, you know, vaccines and whatever, and they were the only ones who could really do that, and they did it on behalf of all of us, not just the US. So the important thing is that they have great resilience and great flexibility, and Winston Churchill was right in the end. You know, the US will do everything and make every mistake, and in the end it'll do the right thing.
We will see. Arthur Sinodinos, great to get your take, your analysis on this significant milestone for the country where you now reside. Really good to catch up with you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
And thanks for your company as well. Mel Clark will be back in the Politics Now feed from Monday, and Insiders on the Background will return at the end of the week. See you next time.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.